Welcome, everybody. My name is Matt Seifer from the Steers Center podcast here with you today. I'm the director of the Steers Center for Global Real Estate and the Atera Kaufman Professor of Real Estate, and very thankful and happy to have Michael Phillips here with us today. Michael is a principal and the president of Jamestown. For those that may or may not know, Jamestown is a very high quality investor. Offices, headquarters offices anyway, in Atlanta and Germany, at least based on my prior understanding of the firm, there's a lot of German capital involved. And when I was working with Invesco Real Estate, we always thought of them as owning high quality real estate. These are very sophisticated institutional investors, high quality assets. And so this conversation we're going to have today about the metaverse is very interesting from that perspective of a traditional real estate investor who is moving into the metaverse. And to help us with that, we have Michael Phillips, who's a principal and the president of Jamestown, who oversees development and execution of the company's real estate projects globally. He's done a lot while he's been at the firm. They're all over the globe, literally. And while he's been there, they've more than tripled the firm's AUM. So Michael, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, happy to be here. Nice to see you.
So I was well aware of your Times Square project in Decentraland, and I attempted to get into the party that you all had on New Year's Eve. But for the benefit of our audience here, can you bring us current as to what Jamestown has done in terms of investing in the metaverse, and in particular, what you're doing in the virtual real estate world?
Sure. So, for those of you who are not familiar with One Times Square, it is the building that is the backdrop for New Year's Eve. It's where the ball physically sits atop and drops at the stroke of midnight. We have owned and operated the asset for over 25 years and have therefore produced New Year's Eve in New York City with Times Square Alliance in the city of New York across that period. In 2020, as the dialogue about the metaverse was starting to kind of ramp up and what Internet 3.0 or even Internet 4.0 starts to look like, it became clear to us because of COVID that an in-person event would be impossible at the end of 2020. So we embarked on creating a virtual experience, which had full build out of the square, portals into retailers, games, dance performances, music performances, the ability to build and customize an avatar and to experience it across a variety of devices. And that process was truly educational for us in terms of figuring out how to engage the consumer and the public and really engage them across multiple jurisdictions. So typically the event has about 100 million eyes on it. In 2020, we had 300 million eyes on the event. And a piece of that was driven by the metaverse play, but the metaverse play or the virtual play was a pretty small contributor, but was a great test and a really high quality group of users. So in 2021, we endeavored to take it further with a partnership with DCG in some key parcels in the Southwest quadrant of Decentraland, and to really sort of test and iterate around what it means to develop in the digital space a piece of real estate. Not surprisingly, it takes quite a bit of capacity to build out the level of detail we did in creating Times Square, but Decentraland was a great partner in that regard.
So this is awesome, man. I didn't know about the Southwest quadrant component, but before we get started, in some respects, is this real estate in your perspective? We've had a host on here before who indicated that this is indeed not real estate. It's a misnomer. It's really a gaming execution. What's your view on that?
You know, I think some of the most valuable real estate over the last 10 or 15 years has been signs and digital signs on buildings or ad placements in search engines and on the internet. So I think in many regards, it is like real estate and is real estate in that it will ultimately inure an income profile and a credit profile and a process with which you can value. I think to start, there's definitely a speculation game going. I liken it a little bit to Miami Beach in the early 20th century before there were any buildings, right? Everyone bought their plot of sand and they speculated. And it wasn't until people started building hotels and houses and infrastructure and created a way for people to engage that it actually then became meaningful in terms of sustainable long-term value. So I think it is in many regards a form of real estate. I think the gamification and the piece that we're starting with, which is digitally native, you know, sort of gaming adept people. So the projects and experiences that are launching are geared and pointed at those people. You know, I've used this example before. You know, Travis Scott did a concert in Fortnite in 2018 and 12 million people logged in concurrently to watch it, which was astounding. And now you have ABBA, you know, a completely different music genre, having a series of concerts with their first album in 40 years, selling tickets sequentially to concerts that are all virtual. It's a completely different age group, completely different customer, but it's the same drive. And so I think as more of those services, whether it's a partnership with a fashion brand or a way for people to try clothes on an avatar that has their exact measurements and have them tailored, it will become more and more ubiquitous that this is really Internet 4.0 and that it's the way we experience really three-dimensionally and in a multiple sort of sensory sort of way, particularly with advancements like Oculus and consumable devices, that the space between physical and digital will be blurred even more and people will adopt it more widely.
That's great. And when we think about the traditional real estate world, the physical world, there's a lot of supply-demand dynamics, of course, right? And scarcity and proximity and things like that. And is there any of that or similarity in the way you think about at least what you did in the Southwest Quadrant of Decentraland? If you come up a little bit, like there's a lot of metaverses, right? Decentraland and Sandbox are obviously the largest, but there's others, right? So I almost think about that as market. So can you talk about maybe market selection and how you think about actually buying parcels?
Yeah. So I think that we as humans think and act sequentially. And so even though there will be hyperlinks and the ability to have portals through to other environments and to find your intended information in a very targeted way, what we do once we get there is we tend to check other things out. So think about a search engine and what comes up first and what's promoted or what's around you. So I see the digital real estate play quite similarly, that as neighborhoods build out and as experiences co-locate, so we already have Sotheby's in one area of Decentraland and we have gaming in another area and we have fashion happening with a fashion play, that co-location of like-minded businesses and consumers will create a neighborhood landscape and people will explore around in that neighborhood. So I do think location matters. I think Maine and Maine is still important, right? Or being, off Maine is important depending on what you're trying to do. I think that affinity groups are unlimited. You know, you can talk about, babies. You can talk about babies that are, highly intelligent. You can talk babies that have learning disabilities. You can talk babies that are single parent, dual parent, same sex parents. There's all kinds of subsections inside baby, but baby can then become its own sort of broad topic. And I think it's, as we move forward, you're going to see people connect, just like there's not one dating app, there's Bumble, Tinder, Grindr, all the senior citizen ones, there's everything you can imagine and people find what's meaningful to them. So yes, I think it's a long way of answering your question. I think it does matter.
So when we back up even a little bit more, when we think about Jamestown, as I described in the early going here, what was the impetus for this move into the metaverse naturally?
I think before COVID, we were seeing a very rapid adoption of technology and an integration of technology into our daily lives, with prop tech moving, kind of increasing and finding ways to reduce the friction of experience and to create more efficient ways to manage and operate and access physical real estate. So moving into COVID and now moving out of COVID or living to some extent with COVID, we're seeing the most rapid adoption of technology in our lifetime. And I just don't think you can opt out of this. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want a better, faster, more engaged, more Technicolor experience? And the metaverse offers that. And I think for physical real estate, it's an amplification of all the great content and retailers and restaurateurs and office tenants and brands that inhabit the physical real estate.
So obviously we don't know each other, but to say that I'm a tech savvy person would be strong. I would not be a tech, you know, neophyte either. But so if I'm a good proxy for the public, how do you see people like me ultimately engaging in this actually with the metaverse? I've been in a variety of these, you know, metaverses, principally with a student of mine right beside me helping usher me through it, right? So how would you see this actually integrating into my life?
Well, I would liken this to mainframe computers in the 1960s. So you remember when the dots and dashes used to come out and you would calculate what information came in a computer that took up a whole building, right? And so you may be tech savvy, but the real sort of adoption of the metaverse is when the person who's not savvy at all finds their way into engaging with the metaverse because it solves a problem for them. So whether it's medical issues or imaging issues or it's entertainment, something as simple as seeing a concert for a 70-year-old who wouldn't have otherwise engaged that way. And so I think what you're seeing right now is if it takes you having a tech-savvy person next to you to navigate it, then it isn't user-friendly enough. We're in 1.0. I think you're going to go to 5.0, 6.0 very quickly, and people's ability to engage with it will shift. And so I think it's going to be about how fast we can provide familiar experiences that we aspire to engage with in the metaverse. And I think that it won't really be because we've got everyone gaming or we've gotten everyone, you know, with expensive equipment. I think it'll be because it's easy, like your iPhone is easy or your, you know, like we do everything now, you know, with our devices. And I think it'll just take that kind of adoption widespread. And so I think companies like ours and our cohort of people need to lean in as fast as we can and test and iterate along with everyone else.
So that's a great segue. I saw a quote from you in BizNow, how you said that we are, I think the quote was essentially creating your whole portfolio in a series of metaverses. So can you talk about what that means?
Sure. I think starting in Decentraland, obviously, I think you're going to see a space race in 22 and 23 with a lot of metaverses coming online and blockchain-based metaverses, I think, will be the winners. And I think open format will certainly be a winner. And I think as we start to really understand tokenomics and how it impacts our lives more broadly and how blockchain, you know, reduces the friction and allows us to monetize more quickly, we'll see the winners in the physical space or in the metaverse space. But then also I think the content creators will be in very high demand. And, you know, we think of ourselves as a content creator and a product creator in the real estate space. So we're thinking the same way in the digital space in terms of, you know, creating like experiences in that space. So whether it's Pond City Market or Industry City or Chelsea Market or any of Ghirardelli Square, any of our more public facing iconic assets, we'll lead with those. And then we'll move into other parts of our portfolio. But any place we feel like we have a wide constituency of people across jurisdictions internationally, we want to get those projects out in front of people. And I think what it does for the physical real estate is it just amplifies the message and brings customers and affinity groups to know your real estate that wouldn't have otherwise.
So I totally see that in retail and hospitality, even in all of those iconic projects that you have discussed. Are there retailers that are distinguishing themselves as particularly savvy in this space that you're interacting with high degree of regularity?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a variety of old line content providers like Disney, for example, you know, or if you think about small micro brands that are digitally native and are moving into bricks and mortar, I think it's a much easier conversation than companies that aren't. But if you look at what First Dibs did for the antique world, I think you can say the same thing for general consumer products. And when you talk about kind of office and physical space, I think in the future, we're going to see a lot of our conferences and panels and interviews happening in like the CoinDesk studio in the metaverse and people logging in and engaging that way. So I think you can see it across use classes. I mean, maybe self-storage isn't going to be a big winner in the metaverse, but right. I think other ways that people consume content associated with real estate will be winners.
Have you created anything that actually has a revenue stream at this point?
Only through sponsorships. And yeah. I think I gave that example earlier about digital signage on buildings and ad revenue in search engines. I think that will be the first place that will be evident, whether it's, you know, in 2020, we had Kia or any of those companies co-brand with us in the virtual experience. I think you're going to see a variety of those things kind of roll out, which have revenue attachments to them. I think the part where you provide a portal to a company and the company does online transactions, I think that's sort of the next step, but I think it's early yet in that regard.
So as you think about what you're trying to do with your own investments and obviously, or not obviously, I assume a lot of your peers are saying, what's this all about? Tell me more about it. And I would assume you would benefit by other large institutions getting involved in this, being engaged in helping to develop it. Can you talk about what sort of how that competition could be healthy for iterating this, I think, very rapidly, which is a need from what I'm hearing?
Yeah, look, I think the more participants we have, the more widely it'll become adopted. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, community apps in the office space or the residential space. You know, we invested in HQO early. We adopted it across our platform. You've now seen many of the big landlords adopt the same technology. That adoption rate, you know, in the beginning, people were developing their own apps, you know, proprietarily in some regards, and they found that didn't work as well as signing on to the best technology because those folks have a dedicated team to just test and iterate and innovate all the time. And so I think that the same thing is true in the metaverse. I think, you know, Decentraland has a finite amount of plots and pieces of land. The more they get developed, the quicker they become developed, the more nourishing the experience will be for people as they come in to explore. And I think you're seeing an adoption rate. You know, our event was, you know, 20 times the highest user calc in the metaverse to date. And I think if events keep growing at that rate, that growth rate is tremendous. So I think the more the better for all of us.
So last question here. I'm sure if you're in this space, you're obviously familiar with the Bored Ape Yacht Club, and you know they've launched their Ape Coin last week, which has already seen pretty rapid appreciation. And there's some speculation as they might have their own, you know, metaverse. So how are you thinking about that and sort of winners and losers? And a challenge, I think, too, is getting early allocations to some of these metaverses that is important to sort of seeing that appreciation. How do you react to that question?
You know, I think for us, we have always been focused on creating our domestic content, right? Like what is it? What's true for us and what's our unique contribution to the ecosystem? I think the art world is like the experience in music world or the gaming world. It's a very early way for people to engage in something that they feel that nominally they can understand. I think that we're going to go through a variety of highs and lows in that space. And I think people should only be investing money that they're willing to lose. Right. And in that particular instance, but in terms of infrastructure to drive it, we find that a really compelling place to invest. And in terms of content, on the land parcels, creating more value, which is a very similar metric to traditional real estate. Yep. You know, you can speculate on a piece of dirt, but the dirt is worth a lot more generally when it has an income profile and something that can be underwritten.
That's right. Michael Phillips, thank you very much. You're principal and president at Jamestown. Fantastic conversation and discussion on the metaverse. Appreciate you making the time for us today. And we certainly look forward to watching and following Jamestown and your progress here in the near future. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.